My very educated mother just served us noodles. That's a popular mnemonic device that students use to remember the planets: Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. Or if you learned this mnemonic device before Pluto's career setback back in 2006, it may have been nine pizzas that your bookish mom dished up instead. In either case, these are the planets that most of us have studied and have perhaps observed with the naked eye or even with a science teacher's telescope. But these are only the planets floating around one certain mid-sized star in one quiet neighborhood of one average-sized galaxy. There's a lot of space out there, and today we have a whole array of extremely powerful telescopes, space and ground telescopes, that enable us to gaze deeply into all of that space. We've got Hubble, Spitzer, Gaia, TRAPPIST South, Kepler, NuSTAR, K2, TESS, the James Webb Space Telescope, and then there's also the very imaginatively named Very Large Telescope, or the VLT, and that one is soon to be outshined by the equally imaginatively named Extremely Large Telescope, or the ELT. And there are many others as well. And all of these celestial magnifiers enable us to see far further out and with far greater clarity. And they've shown us that the handful of orbs in our solar system is only the smallest beginning. We are finding that planets are everywhere. On this episode of The Sun Also Rises, in June of 2024, we will take a look at some of the planets, the alien worlds, that have been discovered so far. And we'll talk about the ongoing search for Earth 2.0 and the implications that all of this has for each one of us. Exoplanet is the term that astronomers use for any planet discovered outside of our solar system. And the first one of them was found in 1992. And actually, it wasn't just one exoplanet that was found at that time, but two. They are named Fovitor and Poltergeist, about 2,300 light years away from our blue marble. And when these sibling spheres were discovered back in 92, they rocked the world of astronomy. It was huge to find alien worlds, actual planets, outside of our solar system. Since then, stargazing technology has continued to dramatically improve, and so have planet-finding techniques. Techniques such as stellar wobble, direct imaging, microlensing, and the transit method. And combining the increasingly penetrating range of telescopes with this increasingly effective assortment of methods, astronomers have now confirmed the existence of thousands of exoplanets. As of mid-June 2024, the count is up to 5,755. Many of the exoplanets that have been confirmed so far are comparable to the worlds in our solar system. Not terribly unlike Neptune, Jupiter, or Venus. But some of them are as surreal and weirdly wonderful as anything from a Star Trek episode or an Isaac Asimov novel. Or even more so. Hubble Space Telescope project scientist Kenneth Carpenter spoke about this recently. And he said, quote, "We have found planets of almost every type. We may actually be in a situation where reality is more strange than the fictional predictions." And when you hear the details of some of the alien worlds that we've discovered so far, you see that this is no exaggeration. Astronomers have discovered ocean worlds, where deep waters cover every inch of land. And if that's too tame for you, we've also found an exoplanet called Kepler-78b that is covered completely by oceans of lava. And then there's WASP-121b, where the weather conditions cause rubies and sapphires to rain down lavishly from the skies. We've also found at least two planets that are not spherical, but are instead egg-shaped, since they orbit their host stars so closely that the gravity ovals them. We've found some exoplanets that are tidally locked to their star. That's just like the situation is with the moon to Earth. And that's why we always see the same side of the moon. It's tidally locked, so we never see the dark side of the moon. And we found exoplanets that are in this same situation with their star. So that means one half of the planet might be blistering under the star's heat at all times, and the other half may be freezing in unending darkness. We've also found exoplanets that orbit more than one star, and some that orbit dead stars. And we've even found some of what are called rogue planets. These are so freewheeling and too cool for school that they don't orbit any star at all. The list goes on, and the details of these 5,755 confirmed exoplanets are tantalizing stargazers and stretching our imaginations into a whole constellation of new directions. But even these thousands are just the start. Astronomers estimate that in the Milky Way alone, there are 100 to 200 billion exoplanets. And if you're talking about the whole universe, the number grows to a size that we can't yet really even estimate. Science journalist Alicia Sowers wrote about this recently, saying, quote, "With hundreds of billions of galaxies, the universe likely teems with many trillions of stars. And if most stars have one or more planets around them, that's an unfathomable number of worlds." Partly because of these incalculable numbers, exoplanets have astronomers excited beyond words. And the most exciting of all are those that are Earth-like. This means they have the right proximity to their star, and they have a size, mass, elemental composition, and potential atmosphere and potential water cycles. And they have it all in a way that could, potentially, work together to sustain life. One somewhat Earth-like exoplanet, called Gliese 667 cc, lies just 22 light-years away from us, and it has years that last only 28 days long, 28 Earth days. Were this planet orbiting a G-class star like ours so closely, Gliese 667 cc would be far too hot. But its star is a red dwarf, and it's far cooler than the sun. So the distance and the heat kind of cancel each other out. And they do place this exoplanet in the habitable zone, or what's sometimes called the Goldilocks zone, around its star. That means it's neither too cold nor too hot to support carbon-based life. But the trouble is Gliese 667 cc is likely within striking distance of its star's flares. And that could make it far less, or not at all, life-friendly. Well, if you think a 28-day year is short, brace yourself for another exoplanet called Proxima Centauri b. The discovery of this exoplanet in the habitable zone of its star electrified astronomers, partly because it lies only 4 light-years away from us. Galactically speaking, that's a next-door neighbor. So it was extremely exciting to discover this alien world so close to us, and to learn that it is in the Goldilocks zone of its star, Proxima Centauri. But the problem is, this exoplanet, Proxima Centauri b, circles its star so closely that it is bombarded by extreme ultraviolet radiation. And that tight orbit also means that its year is only 11.2 days long. 11.2 days is an entire year. A year that short would be lucrative for sellers of anniversary cards, I guess, but it would be very overwhelming for most of the rest of us. There's another potentially Earth-like exoplanet called Kepler-22b. This one's about 600 light-years away, and it has a 290-day year, which is not too far off from our 365-day year. And Kepler-22b also orbits a G-class star like ours. That's the same class as the Sun. But the trouble here is that Kepler-22b's star is considerably cooler and smaller than the one at the center of our solar system. And that difference very well may turn a cold shoulder to the potential for life there. Next on the list is Kepler-186f. This is yet another exoplanet that may be potentially capable of supporting life as we know it. This one lies some 500 light years from us, and it's only about 10% larger than the third rock from the Sun. But Kepler-186f receives only about a third as much energy from its host star as we do from ours, which hangs a large question mark over Kepler-186f's ability to support a biosphere. And then, as is the case with many exoplanets, there are also lingering questions about what Kepler-186f is really made of. The astronomer Phil Plait wrote about this a few years back. He wrote, "It could be a barren rock, or a fecund water world, or made entirely of styrofoam peanuts, or some weird thing that we haven't even yet imagined." Astronomers believe that the most Earth-like exoplanets so far discovered are those orbiting a Jupiter-sized red dwarf named TRAPPIST-1. This star, TRAPPIST-1, is about 41 light-years from us, and seven planets so far have been discovered in its orbit. All seven of these appear to be rocky planets, like Earth is, and three of these are well within the Goldilocks zone. Astrophysicists using the James Webb Space Telescope are over the moon about the TRAPPIST-1 solar system, and that's in large part because some of its exoplanets appear to have the same kind of secondary atmosphere that Earth has. And they think that could mean these planets might have what it takes to support life. Ward Howard is a Sagan Fellow at the University of Colorado Boulder, and he studies TRAPPIST-1 and the planets orbiting it. And he recently said, quote, "There are only a handful of stellar systems where we have the opportunity to look for these sorts of atmospheres. Each one of these planets in the TRAPPIST-1 system is truly precious." Every month now, there are more Earth-like exoplanets being discovered, and many of them seem to have some somewhat promising circumstances. Yet, no matter how many of them we find, Earth 2.0 remains elusive. We seem to never find one that really has all the circumstances in place. And there is good reason to think that no matter how many exoplanets we discover, we will never find one that's a true Earth twin and that is home to life. The Bible shows that Earth itself was once in a condition somewhat like the desolate exoplanets that we're now discovering. Genesis 1 verse 2 says, "The earth was without form and void." That's a bleak description. These words, "without form and void," are translated from the Hebrew words toyu and boyu, and they could also be rendered waste and empty. That was the state of earth when God determined to renew and restore it to a place of abundance, where new beings, human beings, could live. Transforming a planet from toyu and boyu into a thriving biosphere is no small feat. It's a momentous job, and Genesis 1 lays out how God accomplished this dramatic restoration. It talks about the atmosphere being healed so that the sun could once again energize and light the planet. It talks about the surface being restructured to separate dry land from ocean areas. There's also some language implying that the rotation was apparently altered, and plants and animals and people were created. It's all described there in the first chapter of Genesis and continuing into chapter 2 as well. And the Bible also has plenty to say about the vast universe beyond Earth. But it makes clear that at present, there is no life on the other planets, whether you're talking about the planets here in our solar system or all of the exoplanets. Romans 8, verses 19 through 22 say the whole universe is presently in bondage to decay and is figuratively groaning over its state of lifelessness and deterioration. The late educator Herbert W. Armstrong discussed these scriptures in his book, The Incredible Human Potential. He wrote, "This passage indicates precisely what all astronomers and scientific evidence indicates. The suns are as balls of fire, giving out light and heat, but the planets, except for this Earth, are in a state of death, decay, and futility." End quote. So if you read only that much of it, the cosmic situation would seem bleak. It would seem like there's little reason for us to keep on studying exoplanets, and perhaps no real purpose for the vast universe. But there is much more to this passage. It states that the whole universe will be set free from its current condition. Why would the universe need to be set free from the current state of lifelessness and decay? Because as we learn from Isaiah 45, verse 18, God created the universe not in vain, but to be inhabited. That's what Isaiah 45, 18 says. It says it's not just the earth that God designed and made to be inhabited, but the universe. That means the exoplanets will undergo a process similar to the Genesis 1 restoration that Earth underwent. Imagine the recreation described in Genesis happening to trillions of planets. If a given planet is not in the Goldilocks zone, maybe it'll have to be nudged into a more benevolent orbit so that it can undergo terraforming. Or in the case of those rogue planets, more than a nudge will be needed to lock them into the orbit of a good star. If a planet is tidally locked, it'll have to be given a spin. Atmospheres will be created or repaired. Surfaces will be restructured. Entire planets will be retrofitted with water cycles. And intricate ecosystems will be designed and brought to life. Some of this will be life as we know it. Much of it very well may be life as we don't yet know it. Some may not even be carbon-based. The Bible doesn't reveal all the details of this future universe-wide project of liberating the exoplanets from their current condition of lifelessness. It doesn't tell us all of those various details, but it does show us who will be carrying out this incredible work. Romans 8, verse 21 says it will be, quote, "the children of God who accomplish this." The children of God. That means us, potentially. Connecting this passage in Romans with such passages as Psalm 8 and Hebrews 2, Mr. Armstrong explained, quote, "For those willing to believe what God says, he says that he has decreed the entire universe with all its galaxies, its countless suns and planets, everything will be put under man's subjection." Mr. Armstrong continued, "When we, converted humans, are born of God, then having the power and glory of God, we are going to do as God did when this earth had been laid waste and empty. We shall impart life to billions and billions of dead planets as life has been imparted to this earth." Mr. Armstrong wrote a whole book and numerous articles on this topic, and he discussed it extensively. And the reason for all that attention is because this is a huge part of the meaning of life. Mr. Armstrong wrote, put together all of these scriptures and you begin to grasp the incredible human potential. That's the name of the main book he wrote about this, The Incredible Human Potential. And then he goes on, our potential is to be born into the God family, receiving total power, and we are to be given jurisdiction over the entire universe. It will be an eternal life of accomplishment, constantly looking forward in super joyous anticipation to new creative projects, and still looking back also on accomplishments with happiness and joy over what we shall have already accomplished. We shall never grow tired and weary, always alive, full of joyous energy, vitality, exuberant life, and strength and power. What a potential. So the ongoing discovery and study of exoplanets, it is exciting beyond words, but not for the reason modern astronomers think. The truth is, no matter how good the telescopes and planet-finding methods get, those who hope to find life on an exoplanet in this age will only be disappointed. But in the future, when God begins the next phase of his plan for mankind, then untold billions or even trillions or quadrillions of planets will become rife with life. We can be sure of that because the universe was made to be inhabited. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of The Sun Also Rises. Please check out our show notes if you'd like to order your free copy of that book that was mentioned so much there. It's called The Incredible Human Potential by Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong. You can find a link to your free copy of that in our show notes. Or if you just go to thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab, then you can order it that way as well. We really appreciate you tuning into the show today, and we'll leave you with the words of Sarah Seeger. She said, in the vast tapestry of the cosmos, exoplanets are the threads that weave the story of planetary diversity and of the potential for life beyond our solar system.